Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Events over the past year have shone a light on racial inequality across the globe. Australia is no exception. This nation's journey towards a more just, equitable and reconciled identity still has a long way to go. With that in mind, and in a spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
I ask the Prime Minister, how good is Australia?
Please explain.
I'm here to make a public statement.
Australia is back on track.
I actually find it gobsmacking.
Just dumbstruck.
I'm going to shirt front, Mr. Putin.
I want to thank that fellow down under.
I don't think I know.
I have no hesitation.
That should cause great concern.
Just sit down, Booker.
It's sticking your eyes.
You're a classic space invader.
A social climbing sycophant.
He needs a mirror.
I mean...
Oh, fair shake of the sauce bottle, mate.
Taste of democracy, very good.
G'day, Mark Kenny here with the final Democracy Sausage for 2022. Democracy Sausage, of course, comes each week from the Australian National University, and I'm with the Australian Studies Institute in said university. As advertised, this is the much-anticipated awards episode, widely regarded as the most sober and rigorous of any such industry commendations, as you will see, or at least hear. Our judges are right now nervously shuffling their notes, wondering if they've missed something or someone. So let's go to them now, familiar as they are to all. Dr. Maria Teflaga is a senior lecturer in political science at the ANU's esteemed School of Politics and International Relations. Hi there, Maria.
Hello. I have wasted significant university resources coming up with this list.
Right. Duly noted. And Frank Bongiorno was professor in the School of History and, of course, most recently prominent for his wonderful new book, Dreamers and Schemers, A Political History of Australia, Black Ink Books. Just thought I'd throw in the publisher there, Frank.
Brilliant. Thanks. We'll give you the award for shameless plugging, I think.
Well, let me shamelessly plug it a bit further because it's an outstanding book. It's really, anyone who's interested in politics should be reading this book. That's the first thing. But look, you know, we are on the cusp of Christmas, as I understand.
Yeah,
it's still available, isn't it? I
mean, it is just reprinted.
Yeah,
yes,
so it's had to go into a second. Yes, there you are. If you're looking for a gift for the thoughtful person in your orbit, I think
you need
do
one
better.
Of those larger Christmas stockings, though. You know, not one of those narrow ones, because it's got heft, it's got weight.
It does have, but it's one of those gifts that shows that you've done a bit of thinking, or at least listened to this podcast, which can be quite different things, actually, as you're about to find out. Now, look, as I say, these awards are revered in political and media circles for their rigor, for the sheer sort of structure and methodology that goes into them. So, you know, it's an august sort of business. So let's go to our first category, most flagrant and self-interested backflip. The winner of which in 2020, of course, was Matthias Cormann. You may recall he had a sudden change of opinion about whether climate change was real when he was courting the job at the OECD. So I've got a nomination. I'm not sure whether you've got any you want to throw in there, but I'm thinking that the Morrison government had a sort of a road to Damascus conversion. And I'm going to call it, discovering transparency, which they did on election day in relation to on water matters, rather desperately, and it didn't go well.
Well, yeah. So I mean, like, this was the government releasing information about an asylum seeker boat on the election day, in violation of a policy precedent that Scott Morrison himself had actually laid down when he was first immigration minister. So you know, it was like, you know, a double backflip with triple pike, you know, and a bit of a sort of starfish at the end there in terms of its
or a belly flop, really.
Yeah.
and remember, they had the text ready to go, the Liberal Party text,
That's
to voters, telling them all about it, ready, set,
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And it was shameless, really, because there was no, there's never been any apology for this sudden change. I mean, I remember all those press conferences where, when Morrison was Home Affairs Minister and, you know, the on-water matters defence was impenetrable. You couldn't get information out of the government for quids, you know, and then suddenly there it was, flowing freely and contemporaneously on election day. That's what a coincidence.
I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if we'd call that a backflip, but also, you know, do you remember the release of the information that there was that Chinese boat off the West Australian coast during the election campaign? I mean, you know, that's sort of in a kind of similar
it was
vein.
It was part of the same overall argument, which was essentially that the world is watching the Chinese and people smugglers in particular, and they're already making adjustments for this new soft regime that's going to come in and essentially turn us into a, you know, make our borders porous and so forth. Now look, I probably should say, given the dominance of the former government, that it's fairly likely that there'll be, and we have taken some recommendations from listeners. I've invited you, the listener, to send in your suggestions for some categories and nominations, and we've had quite a few, and we'll come to them. But I think it's fairly true to say that we're going to have Scott Morrison's name mentioned a fair bit here. Because he did rather, I mean, if you're going to become the whole government by yourself, then I suppose, you know, you do tend to straddle a few categories.
That's true. It's sort of, it's like a.
Look, he's multi-talented.
That's true. Box trifecta, isn't it, in racing, where you sort of you have extra chances of winning because there's all these combinations.
That's right. Like that. You pay a bit more and you get every category covered.
Exactly. This was the box trifecta of. In fact, it was more than that. It was in that one where, you know, where the odds in a particular race are such that if you bet on every horse, you're going to come out ahead.
He's
done that. Yeah, that's what he did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of backflips, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't think we can really kind of forget the sort of claim that he could change, right? Like, you know, I mean, that's like a sort of more personal instead of a policy backflip or a process backflip, but that, you know, that he could become a different kind of leader entirely and suddenly someone who could sort of take responsibility, which
Now let me just clarify this. Are you talking about the famous bulldozer
moment? I'm talking about the famous bulldozer moment.
Say that's actually one of the other nominations I've jotted down here.
Scott
Morrison for admitting he was a bulldozer before actually going on to prove it on a soccer pitch with
taking
an 8-year-old
kid. That kid was really pissed off too, you know. I think he was really irritated that the Prime Minister or the then Prime Minister wasn't given a yellow card, you know.
Yeah, well, that was definitely a red card event, and it was way off the ball. I mean, the ball had gone elsewhere.
I would have given the man a red card years ago, but anyway,
never would have picked that.
But it's already assuming the kind of status of the Mark Latham handshake moments. I noticed that Nikki Savage.
Well, it sort of had a bit of the Mark Latham taxi driver moment as well.
Fortunately, the lad didn't end up with a broken arm, but geez, he's probably pretty lucky. I mean, Morrison's not. I mean, I can say this. He's not slight.
He's a solid unit.
He's a solid unit.
Yeah.
A solid unit.
It turned out to be pretty loose.
Turned out to be a very loose unit.
Yeah, substance, that's for sure.
He certainly had, yeah.
And, of course, the other one that I'm not entirely sure this fits completely within our technical time frame, but there was the backflip over net zero, you know, after years of negation and so forth and saying it wasn't necessary, suddenly, the Morrison government flipped to net zero by 2050 without changing any of the sort of internal architecture. All the policy settings were fine. There was no need for any interim targets. It seemed to me to be, I mean, the category is most flagrant and self-interested backflip, and that surely scrapes in there.
Oh, definitely, you know, and I mean, like, it's sort of like a crab kind of backflip at that too, you know, because they spent a good like 2 years kind of
It was undignified,
sort of shuffling towards a position, and actually, I'd actually forgotten that the former Prime Minister used to do this, but remember how he used to say, well, "I've always said that," you know, when he clearly hadn't, you know. I mean, I guess what I'm really saying is that I worry for the future of this category going forward. given like the outstanding talent that we have had, you know.
In backflips.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it'll be okay.
I think we'll see some backflips. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, government. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, the Albanese government backflipped pretty quickly on what was that matter? The pandemic payments.
That's right.
They withdrew. They said they were going to withdraw when they ended on, I think it was end of September, and initially very strongly held to the position that was happening, and then there was a backlash and there was a backflip. But I suppose
it was more shameful rather than shameless. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, it was recognizing that the community expected something completely different. They wanted to see, many people wanted to see those payments continue. It was inconsistent with their other messaging about COVID, and particularly about people, you know, being forced back into the workplace because they didn't have any pandemic payment assistance. So, there was a backflip. I remember writing about it at the time that this was one that needed to happen. But, you know, I mean, all governments do it, so I expect we'll have plenty of material for that next week, but next year. But I think we can say that given that he's featured in all three nominations, Scott Morrison wins the award.
He does, and I think we should give an honourable mention to Anthony Albanese in the present government over COVID. You know, they made so much of the dreadful things that the government, Morrison government, was doing over COVID, and now it's sort of footloose and fancy-free, really, isn't it, you know?
There's a lot of commentary about this too. Perhaps not so much mainstream comedy, but that was a Freudian slip. On social media particularly, a lot of criticism about Albanese, for example, coming out of having COVID in the last week or so but not wearing a mask and those sort of things. And we now see the government tightening the availability of mental health services related to COVID. I think you're now going to have a prescription to get a PCR test. You know, and of course you need a PCR test to get antivirals, antivirals being something that apparently really helps in the early 2 or 3 days of testing positive. So, yeah, you're right. There's a sort of a sense that living with COVID is now sort of partly involves ignoring COVID rather than necessarily making all the right changes. Well, look, I've got one other category.
nomination?
I do have one other nomination, and that is Liz Truss for campaigning for the leadership with Kwasi Kwarteng on the promise of tax cuts for the rich.
Oh, right? Yes.
And then sacking him, right, for doing it.
That was quite a backflip. Let me think about it. That was quite a backflip. I mean, I've never quite seen one like that before.
That
was actually quite spectacular, wasn't it? You know, and the dismount wasn't good, was it? You know,
No.
It was
missed the mat.
That
entirely.
Was a backflip off an overpass onto a road of a truck.
Yeah. Well dressed as a lettuce.
Exactly. Next to a level crossing, you know. You know what?
We had a category called Maddest Moment. That would be pretty close to it, wouldn't it? I mean, if you think about a political kind of meltdown, where everything collapses inwards, you know, an implosion of some type. That was it right there for the Tory party. You know, you saw Johnson's leadership flame out spectacularly. He stays around there.
Yeah, that's right. He really didn't, like, he sort of quit by not quitting, right, if you recall, right?
That's right.
And then, you know, he ruined everyone's summer with this unedifying, like, leadership contest in the Tory party, which sort of produced Liz Truss, a cosplay Margaret Thatcher.
Cos lettuce player.
Well, indeed. I believe it was an iceberg, Mark. Which cost £17, you know, flown in direct from Morocco, from Tesco's.
And people might be wondering about this lettuce thing, right? But I think let's just clarify that, because I think it was a number of newspapers were talking about this, you know, that her leadership was so bad that a lettuce would – They were betting markets were taking odds on what would go off quicker, her leadership or a lettuce. And I think the Daily Star, which is sort of a left to centre paper, actually had lettuce cam. They actually had
exactly. For those of you who haven't seen it, like, they basically got an iceberg lettuce, got it a wig and put a face on it, and then just set up a camera to watch it sort of slowly decompose. And I'm pretty sure Liz only lasted 2 or 3 days, right? The lettuce was looking pretty good. Yeah. I mean, you know.
She looked like she'd been flogged by a wet lettuce.
Which for our older listeners is a reference to Paul Keating.
Keating is exactly, yes.
Being thrashed by wet lettuce from John Hewson, you know. Yeah. I mean, look, I was thinking the On Water Matters like kind of had this one in the bag, but you're right, Liz Truss's tax backflip, you know, like given how sort of spectacularly it ended, I'm not sure and I mean it was entirely self-justified and it completely failed. And you know, she's perhaps one of the shortest serving prime ministers.
I think she is the shortest serving.
Yeah, which is impressive for a country that has a long history to draw upon, right?
I believe she's studying up on Francis Ford or something. So there's a prime minister somewhere.
Yeah.
that didn't quite serve as long
as
she did.
9 days or something like that. Yeah, exactly.
It's a really interesting study for political scientists, though, isn't it? In the, or a case study within that field. About the role of parties in selecting leaders, because quite clearly Rishi Sunak was favoured by the parliamentary Tories, but Liz Truss was favoured by the membership, and there was 160,000 of them, apparently. Amazing.
Which is impressively large compared to our country. But anyway, I've interrupted you, Mark. You were making your point.
I'm just interested in your thoughts about that.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's actually one of the reasons why, I mean, have we noticed that Labor actually hasn't run a contest since they elected Bill Shorten the first time? Because they've kind of come to recognise that all of this internal party democracy is a bit risky, right? And I mean, you know, we saw the sort of Corbyn experiment and exactly where that kind of went. And yeah, you know, I mean, the result was Liz Truss, who, I don't know, I mean, like, the tax cuts thing wasn't the only thing. Like, she then, like, disappeared for, like, four or five days, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But, I mean, going back to her selection over Sunak when it came down to just the two of them, because that's how the thing worked, you know, a whole series of runoffs within the parliamentary party. Then they end up with two candidates and that goes to a ballot of the members, right, the rank and file members.
Yes. Yeah.
And, of course, you've got a man of Indian background and a woman, right, a white woman.
Yeah.
And there's a fair bit of commentary, most of it based on supposition, I guess, but reasonable supposition that that race was a factor, a strong factor in the – and there's some evidence for that. I mean
– There is.
Talkback callers were open about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess that's what you kind of get. Like a party selectorate is always going to be very narrow. You know, MPs at least have they tend to – you know, they might be very ideological, but they also have to like moderate to represent – you know, more than the party.
Yeah, they
base.
Represent outside the party.
Indeed.
And also they understand they know the person personally in ways that rank and file members don't, and they know that person's abilities within the realm of politics, within the chamber, for example.
Yeah. So we got Mark Latham.
Yeah, exactly.
And Scott Morrison.
Well, and Kevin Rudd, right?
And Kevin Rudd.
Experiment.
And Kevin Rudd.
You know, I mean, I guess it sort of says something about who's getting
faultless.
Elected.
I saw it in action in 2010. I actually wrote an article on this because I went along to Manchester, you know, which is one of many contests in the Labor leadership contest, which ran over many months. There were, I think, five candidates from memory, including two Milibands, and it was very interesting. I mean, it did seem a great exercise in terms of engaging enthusiasm and mobilising interest.
Prima facie, it's democratic, right? That's its great attraction, is that, and it's very hard to argue against things that are democratic. But even the Republic, when we think back to 1999, it became very hard to argue that you were both a Democrat and opposed to the idea of a democratically elected president or you know, to replace the Governor General. Those sorts of ideas within democracies have this kind of, they come freighted with this value already, but they may be wrong, which I think is where you were going, Maria, in terms of the narrow selectorate, as you called it, because party memberships tend to be which is obvious when you think about it, but they tend to be more extreme. So conservative party memberships tend to be more conservative than the broader community, which is one of the reasons why they've decided to join the party. They're sort of committed to those values in ways that ordinary folk might not be. And similarly, Labor rank and file will be more progressive than the broader community.
Yeah, that's
large.
Right. That's right. You know, and so they're permanently sort of dissatisfied. But I mean, like the Tory party had kind of like jumped the shark a few years ago, if you really sort of think about it, you know. And I mean, the sort of the number of cabinets that they've sort of cycled through now, you know, like they've kind of lost their patrician class, and it's brought like a whole new sort of set of actors into politics, which on one level is like, you know, quite refreshing, but you know, on another level, I'm not surprised that we had a prime minister in Boris Johnson who, I mean, do you remember he actually tried to come back recently, right? Like, you know, like just the level of madness in all of this is actually quite kind of extraordinary. Like someone who is sort of pretending to be, you know, a prime minister in effect, in the sort of, with the sort of all the buffoonery and the goings on of Boris and the sort of theatre and the larger in life kind of show, you know, the way he kind of ends up leaving office over, you know, I mean, after so many scandals, the one that finally takes him out is something to do with his whip, you know, you remember that? And he made that rather crude remark about it as well. You know, the whip was accused of, you know, overstepping, like, or basically harassing people, right? Yeah, he's replaced by Liz Truss. And then, you know, she lasts, well, you know, mere weeks. And they're, you know, back to another Tory leadership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who knows where it goes from here? It seems pretty hard to imagine that they could get another term. But they have the insurance or the comfort of some time before that next election. Look, we're going to go to a break in a sec, but let's do this one, this category, because I really like this one. Biggest deal.
For me, I think it's Barnaby Joyce declaring at the end after the election that he didn't really care if the Liberal Party won, which I just thought was kind of extraordinary.
Kind of seemed obvious by his behaviour, actually. He'd been sort of signalling that for a while.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I mean, his whole kind of reason for his reason for the way that he practiced politics was built up on the sort of foundation that, you know, you occupy government and you deliver for your people. But, you know, last time I checked, and Joe Bjelke-Petersen attempted to sort of prove this in the mid-1980s, like the Nats have a limit to what seats they can win, right? And so without the Liberals, you know, he's not going to be able to deliver for his people, as I, you know, you could euphemistically kind of put it, with various like pork-related products.
What do they call it? What was it again? The houses that he talked about, the weatherboard and iron people.
Yeah, that's right. Which many people thought he was saying weatherboard nine for that whole press conference.
The weatherboard nine.
Yeah, there was this whole, you know, because there was like the barley nine and stuff. And seriously, I was watching social media at the time because I was watching the press conference. He did it in one of those towns in his electorate. On a hill with the town in the background, and he kept going on about the weatherboard nine. And it was just his poor diction, of course. He was actually saying weatherboard and dying. But a lot of people would just say, who is the weatherboard nine? I've never heard of them. Is that a boy band, you know? Perhaps a country band? I don't know.
It could be Tamworth Country Music Festival.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'd like to nominate Angus Taylor for that wonderful incident where he repeatedly got the speaker's gender wrong, I think, wasn't it? I mean, it was a deputy, I think deputy, and he was constantly Mr. Speaker.
Yeah.
And then she stopped him eventually and said, look, I don't need Mr. or Mrs. or anything.
Just speaker will be fine. And then he did it again.
Yeah, he said something like, absolutely, I take that. But Mr. Speaker, and then went on. And then he kept saying, yeah.
Well, he's a real listener, you know. I mean, that's the one thing I've always kind of got from his press conferences. Yeah. He's listened to the question. He's internalized it. He's definitely given an answer that matches.
Yes. Let's take a break. And while we do that, we can think about who might be the winner of our next category, or nominated our next category, Most Effective Political Leader International. But that's coming up after the break.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Sharon Bessel. Policy Forum Pod is the podcast for those who want to dig a little deeper into the policy challenges facing Australia and its region. Each week, we bring together expert analysis to tackle the big issues facing our region and to propose policy solutions. It's insightful, it's positive, and it's always fun. Policy Forum Pod is out every Friday. You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Or find us at policyforum.net/podcasts.
Welcome back to ANU's Democracy Sausage. Now, I was remiss in not actually saying who won the biggest deal award. I actually had it in brackets, Nob.
How crude, Mark. How crude. Oh, dear. Lowering the tone.
I was just looking at, I mean, someone was very helpful in sending me the awards categories that we, you know, on Twitter that we used last time, and I think it had in brackets. or maybe I'm looking at my own script. But anyway, we had our nominations were Angus Taylor and Barnaby Joyce. And, you know, whilst it would be nice to sort of award it to them both, I think we have to make a decision. What are we going to go for?
Well, I mean, you know, Angus Taylor, I guess.
Why don't we throw in Michael McCormack for actually knowing that there were that one of his ministers, I mean, some coalition agreement, for actually knowing that one of his ministers was having his portfolio duplicated surreptitiously by the Prime Minister, or at least secretly, and not doing anything about it?
Yeah.
I thought that was Barnaby.
Yeah.
Wasn't that Barnaby?
No, that was
McCormack. Yeah. Well, it spread across the two leaderships.
Yeah. It did. Right. It was. Yes.
I mean, they both deserve it because they carry on about this, and it's still secret. Coalition agreement. Yeah. And this was obviously a breach of the coalition agreement, whatever the hell it's got in it, because it was appointing a Liberal Prime Minister over a bunch of National Party ministers.
No minister worth his or her salt in the past would have accepted this. They would have said, I'm sorry, this is a vote of no confidence in me as minister by my Prime Minister. I'm stepping down.
Pitt should have resigned. I mean, of course he should. Keith Pitt should have resigned.
The would have been a huge loss to the government.
Would have blown it up, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would have. I mean, the point is, if he'd resigned, it would have exposed the whole issue, right?
Yeah.
And that may have been a good thing for transparency and for you know, because I mean, things that happened after that, i.e., ministries that were acquired after that surreptitiously.
I just thought of something. We haven't mentioned the Governor General.
Oh yes. Well,
best new musical talent.
Long may we say, "God save the Queen," because nothing
will save the Governor General.
Indeed, yeah, that's true. Well, I think the Governor General is guilty of at the very least, egregious incuriosity. Wouldn't you say? I mean,
I'd give him a Dill Award.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good late nomination.
It's a late nomination.
Yeah. And for bringing the whole office, which is symbolic in sort of almost every way, for bringing it into severe disrepute. Along with his wife for that singing.
Well, you are my sunshine. I mean, it's probably not quite up there with John Kerr at the Melbourne Cup in 1977. But
nothing will beat that.
Nothing will beat
where
that.
Where he was completely pissed.
Yeah.
To use a technical term.
That's right.
He'd taken advantage of the hospitality.
All right. Well, I'm happy with that late nomination. I'm going to go with it. I think that's sort of, it's a good deadlock breaker, that one.
I think so. I like that. I like how you've,
And
Hurley it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Governor General. Good God.
So easy to forget.
I know. I had actually completely
so hard to remember, so easy
that.
To forget.
Yeah, that's right. Colourless.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's do a good one. Most effective political leader international, in the international category, right? Seems to me there's only really one nomination that I can think of that we need to mention, and that's Vladimir Zelensky in Ukraine. I mean, Perhaps there's one other. He hasn't actually done much yet, but he has fought back from extreme adversity and retaken the presidency in Brazil.
Lula, great comeback, and ended a
corrupt and extreme and antediluvian government. So Lula definitely is a
contender,
and a great breath of fresh air, literally in this case, because he has promised to stop logging of the Amazon. I mean, this is an extraordinary thing, and the bloke's been subject to the most outrageous political discrimination. He's served time in prison for trumped up charges. You know, he's been the subject of he's come from the wrong side of the tracks, as it were, in the sense of had none of the privilege that most of the successful people in the political class have had, the inside running. And I mean, he may make some mistakes, but his arrival is a great thing for the environment and for that country.
We could nominate the Finnish Prime Minister for reminding us that there are some political leaders who are kind of normal.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Don't you think we should do that?
Impressive partier. Impressive apology maker.
For putting the party in party.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. She certainly did put the party in party. Yeah. For those listeners who don't remember the Finnish Prime Minister, she went to a rave, right, or something like that.
She was having a good time.
Yeah.
Prime Minister Sarin, right? Sarin?
Yeah.
She was here just recently.
Yeah, here recently. Yes, indeed.
No, I agree, although I think that I think it's Zelensky.
I think it's extremely courageous to stay in your capital when you know that, it's pretty clear that they thought that the capital would be taken to rally the nation, right?
That's a really important point. And to be serious for a minute, when this all started, when Russian tanks rolled in across the border and the war started, it was widely... We were all told this by strategic experts. It was widely accepted that the Russians had a huge numerical advantage. They were going to roll over poor Ukraine and that Ukraine could not withstand this. The Americans, think about this, actually offered Zelensky escape, safe passage out. He said, I don't need a ride, I need weapons, which was, the indication of his intent. And look at what that intent has added up to. Mm. It is extraordinary. I mean, the rallying of a nation and that defence against this brutality is one of the remarkable things we'll see in our lifetimes, I think.
They probably would have come in and killed him.
Absolutely.
Word was that there were Russian death squads, people on contract who were already embedded in Kyiv for that purpose. Yeah. So it wasn't without personal risk. Yeah. It was a profoundly purposeful and courageous act. And it did, by virtue of that, by virtue of that courage, it gave everyone else a lot of courage. Mm. You could sort of see that happen. So I think Zelensky.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's uncontroversial. Yeah.
Now, he's also going to be nominated in our Person of the Year category, and I don't need to run the rationale again. But the other nomination that I have written down, and feel free if you have others, but the other one I have written down is Sean Turnell, the Australian academic recently released from Myanmar after, 650 days or something.
A couple of years, really.
Yeah. An appalling situation. Anyone who saw the interview he did with Sarah Ferguson, anyone who's seen any of the commentary really about Sean Turnell through that period when he was being held, would have known that he was held in extremely high regard by his colleagues. Mm. And then when you see that interview, you sort of realise why.
That's right, yeah.
Just the sheer humanity and integrity of this man.
Yeah. No, I met him a few years ago, Sean. He's a historian as well as an economist, really an economic historian. All the best people are. And, yeah, look, he's a graceful, good-humoured man who cared about this country, which is why he was there.
Yeah.
And so it was a great tragedy. But, yes, he showed great courage and forbearance through that.
So yeah. Let's give it to Sean, Professor Sean Turnell, Person of the Year. Yeah. I mean, he will be delighted, and a Democracy Sausage Keep Cup is coming to you, Professor Turnell.
That's right. So so you know, we are a podcast about politics.
Yeah, well done. Yeah.
Now, as I mentioned, a number of people who listen have contributed ideas, and let's go through a few of those. For this, Adam Bevan suggested the category of best supporting minister. It's like best supporting actor, but best supporting minister. And the nominees are Scott Morrison for selflessly shouldering the thankless backup work of five other cabinet posts. I told you there'd be some double up here, but I mean, this is quintuple up.
Look, I think real question is which of the supporting ministries did he really shine through on, you know? Well, I mean,
I think that's probably resources, isn't it, where he sort of made an impact.
You know,
he made an impact on resources,
Yeah, okay. I think that's and look, these ones, as I mentioned, people would send in these suggestions and we would send them a Keep Cup. So I should say get in touch with us at our website, which is – I've forgotten already. I'll come back to you on that.
You mean our email address?
Our email address, yes. That's right. We don't have a website.
Yeah. I don't know. We might.
Not really.
You know, not really.
Not a dedicated one. No. Anyway, it's on the – you know, the internet, the thing, you know, like basically a typewriter with a TV in front of it.
It's a series of tubes, the internet, the interwebs,
And so that suggestion was from Adam Bevan, as I say, and I think that's an excellent nomination.
It is.
Best supporting minister.
Prime Minister. That's right.
The Prime Minister was also best supporting minister.
He was also Prime Minister for I think we should add Maurice Payne, Prime Minister for Women, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good. That was a great moment,
you
know?
That's
Prime
Minister for Women. You know, I hadn't thought of that.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure she'll pip out, you know, Scott Morrison in his
It's a hard one to beat.
You know, it's difficult.
This category's really been written for him, let's be honest.
Well, yeah, I mean.
It gives the concept of a do-nothing minister a new meaning because he quite literally was do-nothing of the five, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well.
Which really just – and it mirrored those ministers in that regard to a large extent, some of them at least.
He was very courageous in all of those roles,
He didn't do much.
He didn't put a foot wrong.
Yeah. He didn't put a foot wrong. He didn't do much, but then neither
flawless
did they.
Flawless execution.
Neither did they. Okay. Now, Matt Hodges suggested this one. Again, apologies for the double up, but – and I like this. I like this term LVP. You know, like they have MVP in the basketball for most valuable player. This is least valuable player, right? And he nominates Scott Morrison for being a net drag on the coalition vote leading into the election.
Very much so.
And for his utter failure to take decisions in any of the portfolios in which he'd been sworn in.
There you go, do-nothing minister. Yeah.
Well, what about?
Well done, Matt. Thank you. Yeah,
that's good. I'd like to nominate Stuart Robert. I think.
Oh, yes.
I think he deserves a nomination in that category. Yeah. I mean.
Yes. Well.
I mean, didn't he defend, did he defend Jenny this time around or was that last year?
Oh, I can't remember.
What about the aforementioned Maurice Payne though? I mean, seriously. Or, you know, virtually.
Oh, I think that's unfair.
What about, hang on.
Yeah.
What about all the moderates for doing nothing at any given point, right?
I think we could say they didn't do enough, which shows in the result.
Yeah, and that's why they all left Parliament in a but I mean, just cast your mind back to the first week or two of the election campaign and that story that was running about the Solomons, and just the sheer sort of supine state that the government was in over that issue. You know, I don't think it showed a government that was on the front foot.
But you know, in defence of the moderates, they did rally on the religious discrimination bill.
Sort of.
You know. Well, they certainly sunk the bill.
Some of the moderates were twisting arms to get their fellow moderates to vote for it. Simon Birmingham comes to mind.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some of them did.
What about Alan Tudge?
The problem for the moderates is that there's no issue on which they all agree. You know, they're sort of all over the place and they're kind of weak for it, really. Mm. I mean, they're weak for it anyway because they mostly want to be ministers and it shows, you know, but – Yeah. Alan Tudge?
Alan Tudge, you know.
Best supporting minister.
That's right. Well, the minister, was he the minister or not, if you recall, right?
Yeah. Was he least, we're on LVP, aren't we? Is that right? We're still on LVP, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, was he or wasn't he the minister at the time?
That's right. We were told he wasn't, and then right late in the piece we were told, oh, no, he is the minister, and he's been getting his ministerial salary the whole time.
And if you think about it, I mean, I think Stuart Robert was doing his job, so I think we can discount Stuart there, right? I mean, he was doing how many ministers' jobs, you know? Yeah.
None.
That's true. So, yeah, I mean, we should have an award for creative ambiguity, I think, because Alan Tudge would win that one.
Oh, you know what? I think you're right. Yes, that's right.
It's
that's
all
right.
Getting very hard.
Most elusive.
I'm scribbling on the form. I mean, you know. I don't know what to write.
I like that, creative ambiguity, yeah.
Mm. Well, that may be the result of our deliberations here as well, ambiguity.
Yes. yes.
Alex Tuchel, and I apologise if I have not pronounced that correctly, proposes most money spent on a political campaign without winning a single seat. And he nominates Clive. Yeah.
Well, indeed.
Now, I think we should say technically there is one what do they call it? United Australia Party.
That's true.
Ralph Babbage in Victoria. They snuck one in, thanks to the sort of vicissitudes of Senate preferences and so forth.
We could award them.
But it was a disgrace.
Most delusional election campaign, you know.
Yeah.
Craig Kelly, your future Prime Minister.
Yeah.
I've forgotten that, yeah. And
well, there's the – why wasn't he in the biggest deal award? I mean, this bloke's bloated face was on.
We never awarded a winner, from memory. And that's perhaps – oh, no, we did. Once again, forgettable.
I think the Governor General
– you've forgotten him already.
Yeah. That's right. I'm a Republican, you know. I'm just envisaging this president that's going to come in.
A vacant space where the Governor General used to be.
What about
– right now he's packing his stuff. He'd be aware that once you've had the pin pulled by Democracy Sizes, the jig is off.
And after all, the kitchen renovations are done, so it's time to go home.
Democracy Sausage has 100% faith in. We have 100% faith, and so therefore, of course, they are safe.
Yes.
But no. What about the award for like a one-woman hit squad? Remember Connie Ferravanti-Wells?
Oh, yes.
Sublime tactical strike on the government in the adjournment debate on budget night, you know, like just
– the timing was exquisite.
Was impeccable. Like, I mean, we were talking about backflips before. Like, now this was a landing.
The Don't Get Mad, Get Even award.
Yes, the Don't Get Mad, Get Even award, you know, like a forensic hit job.
Yeah. It'd be sort of a trophy in the shape of someone's spleen.
Exactly. The golden stiletto, right, you know. Yeah.
I love it. The golden stiletto.
The golden stiletto.
Yeah. Revenge is a dish best served cold.
That's ice cold, right?
It was, exactly. Ice pick in the forehead.
It
sort
was,
of, yeah.
Sure. Absolutely, you know, yeah.
Yes, I can't imagine that Josh Frydenberg was overjoyed about it because there he was trying to sell the budget, you know, and this particular stink bomb lands in the room.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, precision strike. Yeah.
Okay, well, there's one.
I don't think anyone can top Connie's performance this year. It's outstanding.
Get Mad, Get Even award. Yeah. I mean, Simon Holmes at court would deserve that. I mean, he didn't get mad on the whole, he certainly got even with having fallen out with Josh Frydenberg.
I mean, now look, we're getting close to the end here, so I'm going to move quickly through a couple. Chris Bruce proposes the most insensitive photo op as a category and nominates Scott Morrison for mopping the floor during the floods. I don't know if you remember if you saw that, but
I can't get the image of him uncomfortably massaging that woman's hair in the salon.
That was bad too.
I agree. And then there was that welding one.
The welding one.
So
I suppose the mopping was
a lot of jobs actually, didn't he?
I suppose that was all the post-fire thing. He needed to be shown to be acting during the fire.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. 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 I don't hold the hose, but I do hold the mop.
Yeah, yeah. I do hold everything.
Everything else.
Everything else, yeah.
Including yeah. five ministries, yeah.
And Yupe Tan, who's a great friend of this podcast, has proposed, and I think this is an excellent point that she makes, and she often does make excellent points, but she proposes recognising what's right, doing what's right and standing up to bullies. And she has nominated, and I think it's a very, very worthy nomination, Bridget Archer, the Liberal member for Bass in Tasmania.
Yes, here.
You know, yes. Who had the sand to vote against the or to vote in favour of the censure motion against yes. her party, and has crossed the floor on a number of occasions.
Including
and has shown
for the yeah. Integrity Commission.
Exactly, yes. because yeah. integrity yeah. seems to actually yeah. matter to her as a matter of principle.
Yeah.
As indeed, I mean, the fact that the Liberal Party, the coalition, you know, was able to say that they were going to accept the Bell Inquiry's findings to change the law, you know, in relation to the gazetting of ministries and so forth to make sure that what Morrison did can't happen again. But at the same time was not prepared to censure the Prime yeah. Minister for Dreadful. Having deceived the Parliament, deceived yeah. them personally, deceived the Cabinet as an institution. I mean, I just thought that was outrageous. And obviously Bridget Archer thought so as well. So I think it's a very good nomination.
We could give Liz Cheney an honourable mention in that one.
Oh,
we?
Yes, that's a very good point. Really? Liz Cheney, yes. Mm. Former senator for Arizona, correct?
Have yes.
I got that? Yeah. Yes, for leading that Jan 6 committee, for being prepared to take on Trump and doing so at the expense of her of her position, because they came after her and they got rid of her.
Yeah.
And she's had to have security around her the whole time. This has been a
not Arizona. It's another state, isn't it?
I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah. Nebraska, Wyoming.
Right, yes. Wyoming. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
I know people are probably going crazy again.
They're
thinking,
who is this
idiot?
Their hair out.
Get them off the stage. Sack them.
Oh, we don't claim any expertise.
Lock them
on
up.
I saw on Twitter yesterday like a drawn map of the US, and it said what the rest of the world thinks of America, and it had sort of on the right-hand top corner, it had sort of top quarter just had New York, right? On the left hand, right down the left flank, it just said California. Right? In the middle, it just said what? And, and around Florida, it just said Disneyland. And that was it. And that was what the rest of the world thinks of America. Yeah. I think I've just demonstrated that, yes, you have to think hard sometimes to work out where these states are. They've got too many states.
They've got too many.
Too many states.
Not enough. Get rid of some of them.
Just have an amalgamation to be like those councils, you know. Yeah.
Just two senators per state. Yeah. And some of those, the disparity between between, because I think, and again, people are going to go nuts when I get this wrong, but one of those states, and I think it might be Wyoming, has about 500,000 people in it, right?
Like that. Yeah,
and California's got X, however many.
Probably 40 million people.
Yeah, 30, 40 million people.
Yeah, astonishing. Yeah. Well, look, I think we've do we have any more?
Well, we didn't mention the Teal Independents. Do they need some sort of special, you know, sort of achievement award? I mean, they had such
Great Disruptor or something like that.
Yeah, Great Disruptor. Yeah. I mean, they had an impact on the nation's politics this year.
Yeah, that's true. And it does bring to mind the performance of the media in relation to that, because you remember that the media, and I've banged on about this a lot, I know, but media treated this like they were some sort of dysfunction, that there was something wrong with democracy, that these people were a party. Remember the endless fuming over, you know, what are they, you know, what will they do when they hold the balance of power? Are they just going to support a Labor government? You know, there was all this sort of, you know, carry on. Of course, they won and they didn't hold the balance of power. And the real story was what's going on inside the Liberal Party when all of its members are abandoning, you know, the party for these other candidates. And as a class of candidates, they had class, you know, like real.
I like that. Classiest class act of 2022. Yeah, nice.
Well, they were seriously good quality candidates, and that's been the sort of, you know, right from the start when you think about Kathy McGowan and then Helen Haynes. Hmm. And then you think about, you know, like the couple of the candidates like people like Karen Phelps who've been in Wentworth, but then going to Zali Stegelin, Warringah, and all of these ones that have come in since, that came in 2022. These are seriously quality kind of MPs. You know, they're people who, well, the Americans would describe as, you know, serious legislators, people who actually know what they're doing and who have made careers for the most part in other endeavors quite successfully and then entered politics sort of later on. So they're definitely worth a mention. But, yeah, I think a dishonorable mention to media. And if we think about dishonorable mentions to media, just think about the performance of the media in the last Victorian state election, which happened quite recently as well.
Yeah.
Herald Sun comes to mind.
Herald Sun, yeah.
But, you know, just like the dictator Dan and all that crap that went on forever.
Yeah.
You know, the so-called Tribune of the People, you know, the sort of tabloid media turned out not to have any idea what was going on in their own electorate.
This is sort of, I mean, on one hand, you're kind of wishful thinking, which is obviously the Herald Sun and co. They wanted him to go, so he was going to go. And then there's the kind of doubting Thomases who were simply unable to conceive that half a dozen Teals were going to sweep the pool and win those seats, despite the fact that there was plenty of data out there saying that they were in with a very good chance. I think that was a bad call. And we've seen it repeatedly. Yes, it happened with Trump, but it also happened with Corbyn in 2017, and certainly in Australian commentary. You would not have guessed that he was so close to being able to win an election from reading anything in the mainstream Australian media about that British election before it occurred. And I think the wishful thinking aspect is very prominent these days.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah. It's funny that actually, because just after the election had happened, there was quite a bit of discussion about how media had performed in, you know, The Age and other, you know, my old paper and others had, you know, written stories saying it's going to be line ball, could be too close to call, you know, Andrews could win, but it'd probably be a minority. And, of course, all of that was wrong, right? And it made me think it's funny when you add together Brexit and Trump in 2016 and then what happened in our federal election in 2019.
And Corbyn's near miss.
But it is really, I think it's really shaken the ability of people to sort of look at data and just report what it says. You know, they sort of, everyone's second guessing and hedging all the time. Yeah. So there's, we talk about elections being about the middle and voters converging, margins tightening as election day comes closer. But it turns out that media pundits sort of shape towards the center themselves because they don't want to be spectacularly wrong.
Yeah.
And they'd rather be a little bit wrong by saying, oh, it's going to be too close, even when it ends up being an increased majority after the so-called Dan slide in 2018. They'd rather be there than have called it that there was going to be a very strong win for Labor, and when it doesn't happen, look like they were, I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting sort of phenomenon that sort of punditry, a game I've been in most of my life, is, it's highly problematic now. Because
it is.
Like you say, Frank, sometimes even when presented with the data, people are just ignoring it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect that Labor was going to increase its share of seats at the Victorian election. I thought it would be a bit narrower than that. But there was very little out there that suggests they were going to lose the election or indeed that they were even going to be a minority government. On this occasion, it's going to be close. They do look really silly because Labor has a tally of seats. It's about double the rest of the parliament in the Legislative Assembly. Mm. I mean, that is a bad call, and it does speak to the low value of a lot of that punditry, I think.
Yeah. But luckily, there have been people on hand to quite quickly straighten us out on what went wrong. They told us that, in fact, the Liberal Party's problem was that it wasn't right-wing enough.
That's true.
You know, there's got to be an award for that.
Yeah.
I mean, most hopeful.
Most blinkered ideological purity, I don't know.
Yeah, they've just had a moderate win, Hawthorne, and they've actually managed to hold on to Q as well. I mean, they actually do have something to build from there, unlike the federal.
And that's Hawthorne's the seat of what's his name?
The new leader, yeah. Pisulto, is it?
Yeah, Pisulto, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So much has happened this year, and we've covered it so inadequately.
I think that is fair.
So admirably inadequately. Yeah.
Most inadequate and a frivolous arbitrary award series.
Yes.
Democracy
and
sausage.
The nominations are us. Look, thanks to you both for this. It's always a highlight having this discussion at the end of the year, and hopefully those of you listening have had a few laughs with us and at our expense.
Mostly out, I'd sorry say.
About, yeah. Sorry about saying Arizona. And that's it for Democracy Sausage. Can I take this opportunity to also thank Angus Blackman, our long-toiling executive producer who holds this whole show together and does fantastic work, and we're really glad that he's sticking around, and Jack Fox, who's in the control room and, again, there every week and makes the audio sound as good as it does. Can't do anything about the content, of course. That's down to me.
And Adelaide, who was
and
with
Adelaide
us,
Haynes, yeah. Yes, indeed, who's sort of left us around now, I suppose, but to go on to other things, but whose dedication and professionalism and good cheer has always been a great asset to us as well, and indeed to ANU, the support that we get around from the Crawford School of Public Policy, the School of Politics, the College of Arts and Social Sciences, Vice Chancellor himself, Brian Schmidt, big supporter of this podcast, and my colleagues at the Australian Studies Institute, Professors Paul Pickering and Shirley Leach, both outstanding supporters and been on the podcast a bit as well. So there's a lot of people that have contributed over the year, and we'll be back, of course, next year. But it's 2023 is going to be different. It's going to be the year of the referendum.
Yeah.
We imagine we're told it will be in the next financial year, and that means either around sort of a little bit earlier than this next year, or perhaps into the autumn of 2024. But that's going to be an interesting one, Frank, isn't it?
Very interesting. Yeah, it'll be. It'll dominate the airwaves, I think, won't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the Labor government's got a lot of legislation through in these last few months.
And I think that's part of the reason they wanted to really get some of these hard things done, because there's going to be a lot of focus on the voice.
They need some clear air, and they need to hone their arguments, because it's going to be a tough one. Yep.
A difficult act of persuasion to come,
I think.
Yes. All right. Well, with that, thanks for being on Democracy Sausage again, Frank.
Well,
always great to have you here. And and congratulations again on Dreamers and Schemers.
Oh, thank you very much for your support of, and it's been great to be involved again this year.
Couldn't do the awards without you, Frank.
That's right. That's right. No one else laughs at our jokes.
Exactly. He's the only one who thinks we're funny.
Thank you to you, Maria.
My pleasure, and happy holidays, everyone.
Thanks, Maria.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.